5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and get your first month free. Just $1 down, $15 a month. No commitment. Deal ends Friday, February 13th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Hey everyone, welcome into Morning Invest on this Monday. Thank you everyone for subscribing, being a great part of our community here. And thanks to all of our new channel members, by the way. A big shout out to all of you by going to morninginvest.com/join. I really appreciate all of the support, supporting independent journalism, covering stories you're not going to see in the mainstream media. We've got a couple of big stories that we're covering today that you definitely will not see on CNN or MSNBC or Fox or any of the big networks, because they are run by corporate elites. So we'll tell you why one of these big stories they'll never cover. We'll get to that this morning. We're going to talk about, though, why it was such a busy weekend for lawmakers as they spent Sunday knocking on the White House door demanding different things be in or out of the stimulus package. All while the U.S. dollar gets ready for a massive crash. So again, if you have you have money in U.S. dollars right now, please, 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 I've been warning you for months. Now, these warning signs are getting louder and louder and louder. Move your money into safer assets. I'm talking about real estate, gold, silver, precious metals, you know, people's currency like Bitcoin. Safer assets right now, because the U.S. dollar will be losing more and more value over the next few weeks and months. Also, we're going to be talking about impeachment. It moves ahead today. President Trump, meanwhile, is building up his legal team. Rudy Giuliani will not be on that team, because he might actually end up being a witness or called to testify himself. So he can't actually represent. It would be a conflict of interest. So we'll tell you about all of those moves that are coming from the White House, or the former White House. And censorship is picking up steam, and we should all be worried about it. We're going to tell you what Facebook and Twitter and others are doing to left-wing accounts. Now, we knew that this was going to come. The purge happened, of course, on the right-wing side just a few weeks ago after the Capitol riots, and now it's happening on the left. And the big corporate elites are running everything. So we'll tell you about all of that a little bit later on the show. Before we get to the news, I want to tell you about our sponsor, our friends over at Truebill. You know, the average person saves $720 per year with Truebill. That's right. You can get started right now by going to Truebill.com/invest and seeing what they have to offer. And it's a pretty incredible setup, what they're able to do. They're able to actually take your take all of the bills that you're paying, like all of the different subscriptions that you have out there that are floating around out there, and they'll actually figure out what subscriptions you've been paying for that you totally forgot about. And you can cancel those subscriptions right inside of Truebill. And the average person with Truebill saves $720 per year. So you can get started today by going to Truebill.com/invest. Take control of your finances. Start saving at Truebill.com/invest. You'll get full credit reports. You can see if there's any fraudulent activity on your accounts. And it's the perfect time at the beginning of, you know, here we are in January, to take stock of your finances. You're going to discover, we had a couple of our viewers that said they signed up and they couldn't believe how much stuff they'd forgotten about that they were paying for. And Truebill helps you get rid of it.
Yeah, I signed up and I've been using it for the past month. And like, I knew some of the stuff that I had, but it actually shows me a breakdown of what I've spent that's over what I spent the month previous and stuff like that. And so it has been helping me kind of keep an eye on my finances with the emails and stuff that I get out of it. So it's pretty cool.
That's great. Yeah, we discovered some stuff that my, like, my daughter had signed up for that we don't, like, didn't even know about. It's like, okay. So, yeah, a new year, a new you. Go check them out. Truebill.com/invest to cancel some of those subscriptions and save a boatload of money. So our thanks to them for the supporting the show. All right, get your questions in now. I want to hear your thoughts on the stimulus this morning, because a test right now is unfolding for President Biden. His leadership on the stimulus front is coming much faster and than anyone thought possible, and it's all coming over this battle for a new round of stimulus money right now. So what do we think actually about the prospects of President Biden's big coronavirus relief bill? Well, you know me, I'm a pretty positive person, right? You probably picked that up about me. I'm a pretty positive person. I'm always sort of a glass half full kind of person, but I'm also pretty skeptical because I've covered Congress for many, many years as a reporter and a news anchor. And so, you know, once you think something is actually going to happen, suddenly, like, other pieces get pulled out of it and it doesn't happen. That's the way Congress works. So you won't be surprised here that I'm pretty skeptical right now that Biden's going to be able to get anything resembling his $1.9 trillion American Rescue Plan through Congress in its current form. You know, it might be ripped apart. It might look totally different, especially if he wants to go the bipartisan route on this thing. I'm also skeptical this morning that Democrats are going to be able to pass anything by March 14th. I know, right? Like, that's a ways away. We thought maybe they'd be passing a new stimulus package sooner than that. But there's a lot of things on the table right now that I don't think Congress is going to be able to get done in time. They have still all of these cabinet members that they have to push through. You have members like Josh Hawley who are basically, I don't know, holding things up on that front. So getting these people through. We also, March 14th, of course, is the deadline when that $300 weekly federal unemployment payments run out. See, this is the thing that Congress always does, right? They put in place a package, and then they suddenly, like, they find themselves up against this deadline because they forget to, like, set a reminder on their calendar that this stuff is going to run out in a few weeks. So right now, they have this reconciliation process. You know, I've been talking to you about this reconciliation process a lot. And, hey, baby girl, can you close that door? You know, everyone's home from school, so it's like virtual learning around here right now. And they're like in their classes doing all that stuff. So I hear, okay, it's story time in the preschool class. I can hear that in my left ear. So I'm sorry if you're hearing preschool classes in your left ear here. But hey, we could all learn a little story. Would you guys like a story time? Let me tell you a story about the stimulus.
Can you tell me a story about why it's now 1,400 and not 2,000 like promised?
Well, David, there once was a new king who wanted to pass stimulus for all of its people. But then there was a Grinchy Congress that didn't want to go as large as $2,000 stimulus checks because they had mean overlords that they had to pay money to in the form of defense contractors and Wall Street overlords. And the little people, the peasants that lived in the village, were once again not going to get money. The end. So that seems to be what's happening right now. That, no, $2,000, yes, you thought. Now it seems like we're not even talking about $2,000.
All the discussion,
all of the reporting. I know. By the way, yeah, that story was awful. You're not going to read that tonight with your kids in bed. Here's the story of the stimulus. By Clayton Morris. Let's talk about reconciliation, kids, because that's that wonky budget mechanism, you know, that triggers a 51 vote threshold for passage in the Senate. And you've been hearing from Bernie Sanders over the past few days on this idea that we could pass this through reconciliation and we wouldn't need Republicans. But that whole piece is complicated because it takes time. It takes a lot of time, actually. And Democrats in the White House right now would need everything to fall in line their way. And nothing like this is going to go off without a hitch. And this weekend, Senator Joe Manchin called a Zoom call with all of these different members of Congress. They got on the Zoom call to talk with the team from the White House over this stimulus. They want to keep these bills targeted, $1,400. They want to make sure that people that, you know, actually have a job wouldn't get this money. which again is incredibly irksome to me, because these people who have a job on paper in many ways had their hours cut. So how are you going to target this? That's incredibly bothersome to me. I like the word irksome better. Use that today. When you're just out and about today, just you throw out, see if you can use the word irksome. So it's going to take time. So here's what I think you should expect on the stimulus front. Right now, the House Budget Committee may begin work next week on a new budget resolution that would include reconciliation. And these instructions from reconciliation would begin the process of that 51 vote threshold that Bernie Sanders is basically pushing for. And that would then help them meet that mid-March target date. But they've got to move quickly on this because it takes a lot of time to put this together. So there's going to be decisions on what this plan is likely this week and into next week. Now, the Senate Budget Committee will also, who you know is led by Bernie Sanders, he's anxious to get to work. He said, quote, we cannot wait weeks, he says, and weeks and months to go forward. We have to act now, he said. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, for his part, and Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell are also still clashing over the future of the filibuster, so they haven't even ironed out those rules yet. And the Senate isn't even organized. But a Senate source working on the issue said, quote, Democrats can bring a budget resolution no matter what. So they can do this with or without Republicans, but the question is, can they do it with or without certain Democrats like Senator Joe Manchin? So if you bring like a budget resolution to the Senate floor, means there will be a votorama. That means that any senator can offer an amendment to the budget. So think about that. 100 senators. If you add this as a budget resolution on the Senate floor, like think back to, I think it was 2017. There were more than 700 amendments to the budget resolution. So all of these senators are just going to be throwing out random budget resolutions. This thing is going to go crazy if they do it that way. And there's going to be more this time. You think 700 was a lot back in 2017? Whoa, whoa. A wawa wee wa. There's going to be way more than that this time. In fact, according to some sources, they're telling that they expect more than 1,000 amendments could possibly be in here, according to Punchbowl News this morning. And only a fraction will actually get a vote. So they're going to slow down this process big time from all of these different senators throwing out amendments. That's why, if you're asking yourself, like, why would this take so long? That's why. So once both chambers then have gotten past that hurdle, it will be massively time consuming. Then the House and the Senate committees have to get down to writing the actual bill. So you see why Congress is like, it's like looking at molasses, like dripping out of a jar. It's like, come on, little buddy. Come on, little buddy. It takes a lot of time. And then the Ways and Means Committee has to then put a big chunk of it to work in the House itself. Same with the Senate Finance Panel. They have to go back and forth. So President Biden would much rather go the route of having actual stimulus legislation that can move more quickly. To do the budget resolution thing and go that route is going to be slow like molasses. And then there's others like over the weekend, I don't know if you guys heard about this, where now one GOP lawmaker says the only way we want to give out stimulus money is if you get vaccinated first and prove that you're vaccinated before we'll give you vaccinations, or before we'll give you stimulus money. Angela Dixon says, thank you for your super chat, says, I just don't understand why he didn't do a standalone bill. President Biden isn't keeping his word. Yeah, you could say that. People wondering why the president who promised in Georgia $2,000 stimulus
right
is
away.
Also not, you know,
even right said away. Right away.
Like literally within the first week, let's pass $2,000 stimulus.
It's what got them elected. The Democrats won in Georgia.
Well, the problem is this is what happens. People make these promises and then they get into office and suddenly have all of these yahoos and this like cacophony of sycophants telling you can't do things. And you forget why you got there in the first place. Yes, that's why John Ossoff and Raphael Warnock won. That's why they won in Georgia. because they said, if you vote for us, that's $2,000 stimulus checks in your pocket. And they were saying that on the backs of what Biden just gave them cover. And now what? Well, is it a reality that, you know, Senator Joe Manchin wouldn't vote for it? So you need 51 votes anyway? And is this the reality of legislating? You know, you have vaccination and testing programs right now, food stamps, school aid, raising the minimum wage to $15 an hour. This $1.9 trillion plan from President Biden is huge, and it's ambitious. But the House passed many of these provisions as part of the HEROES Act last Congress, and yet it all has to be passed again. And then, of course, it has to withstand the Byrd rule in the Senate, which limits what kind of policies can be included in this reconciliation process. We talked about that a few weeks ago. I gave you the history of the Byrd rule by Robert Byrd, Democrat of West Virginia formerly, who said during this budget process, you can't throw in random crap like saving sea lions. It's got to be money-related, budget-related. So Democrats could see some of these critical elements like the minimum wage pushed out of here, because that's not technically part of the budget. So bottom line on that front, Democrats and the White House could meet their target. It's not impossible, but it's unlikely. Brian Deese thinks that they've got to move quickly on this. He spoke on it. By the way, you're going to see a lot of Brian Deese. You're going to see a lot of this guy. He's the new economic chair for the Biden administration. You're going to be hearing from him a lot, really leading this round of negotiations. He says we need to act very soon. We're on the precipice here of a major problem.
Our economy is at a very precarious moment. We are 10 million jobs short still of where the economy was when this pandemic started. Last month, the economy lost jobs for the first time since last spring. Retail sales fell last month, and just yesterday we saw another 900,000 Americans file for unemployment insurance. That's a weekly rate that is higher than any week during the Great Recession. It's a moment that requires decisive action to beat this pandemic and support the economic recovery that American families need. That's why a week ago, President Biden laid out a comprehensive American Rescue Plan, a plan that is focused on changing the course of the pandemic, getting students back in school, and giving families and businesses a bridge to the economic recovery, while also addressing the stark inequities in our economy that this crisis has exposed. We have been engaging closely with members of Congress, with governors, mayors, business and labor organizations in the weeks since, and will continue to do so, and hope that Congress will move quickly to consider this important proposal without delay. At the same time, the American people are hurting, and they can't afford to wait. They need help right now, and that's the motivation behind the actions that the president will take today. I want to be very clear, these actions are not a substitute for comprehensive legislative relief, but they will provide a critical lifeline to millions of families. Just to get into the specifics, the president will sign two executive orders today. The first directs agencies to consider a number of actions that will provide emergency relief for working families affected by the COVID-19 crisis. Within existing authorities, and helping to correct some of the errors or omissions of the prior administration in providing families with relief. I just want to touch on a couple elements that are in that executive order to give you a sense of what we're talking about. On the issue of food insecurity, which is a growing crisis in America of hunger, nearly 30 million Americans last week said that they didn't have enough food to put on the table. So the president will ask the Department of Agriculture to consider taking immediate steps to provide nutrition assistance to hard-hit families. First, by increasing pandemic EBT benefits by about 15%.
And of course, going for the federal minimum wage also increasing. But look, they have a lot of work to do. And this is going to be the real first big test of President Biden's presidency. They're going to have, they're going to have basically a perfect game. They're going to have to pitch a perfect game for this to happen. Also, this new group being called the Sweet 16, the Senate Suite 16. They met with Brian Deese this weekend. The general vibe in that was that they needed vaccine money to start moving right away because of the vaccine distribution problems in the United States. A really, really, you know, problematic turn for vaccine development or rollout. And in some cases, many states like New York have released all 100% of their doses. They're done. They're out. So we need, in order to get these vaccines moving, in order to try to reach that herd immunity level, they need to keep rolling and get these things out as quickly as possible. So right now, this group of 16, it's an interesting moment for this Senate bipartisan group, their so-called Problem Solvers Caucus, now calling it the Senate Suite 16. It's kind of a space that, you know, we'll see what kind of an impact they have. Do they push their leaders to move a vaccine funding bill ASAP or, you know, go towards a new stimulus package? That's the big question, like stimulus first or vaccine distribution or both at the same time. So they've got a lot of decisions to make on the Senate floor and moving this stimulus package forward. So let me know your thoughts on that in the chat. Where do you see this coming down? Do you think that President Biden will be able to push for a bipartisan bill that can get its way through Congress? Or will they have to go the reconciliation route and just try to say, screw you, Republicans, we're going all in right now. We're going all in right now on, you know, on vaccines. I'm sorry, we're going all in right now on this reconciliation path. Anthony Scaramucci was asked about this. He thinks they need to move quickly, and he thinks that they may have to do it. You know, it's interesting to hear members of the Trump administration who've been coming out, and former members have been saying, yeah, they need to get this $2,000 stimulus check. So you have former Trump administration officials coming out saying $2,000. Like, where are the Democrats on? Kristen Swenson says, I still haven't gotten my $600 yet. Yeah, how many of you still haven't even gotten your $600? Let me know in the chat right now. We'll put them up on the screen here. And this is a problem that Biden passed last week. He also passed that stimulus package that would get these $600 out to people. He's like, why has there been this huge delay? Sub-Zero says, so I was wondering if you wanted to get that tax credit, do you need to wait till it passes to file taxes, or will they send you the difference after that tax credit? Well, the tax credit for next year, so anything that passed before, you already have in place. So you would have to wait till 2022 on your tax returns to worry about the 2021 bill that they're negotiating right now. So that's not going to matter. Just file your taxes as normal. Shannon Daugherty says, I think we all need to face the facts that if we do get any stimulus again, it won't be for a while. I think that's going to be the case, folks. I think, if anything, they're sort of targeting mid-March now. What do you think?
Well, and I also think that people need to, I mean, people are like, it's the damn Republicans. It's not. It's both now. It's both Democrats and Republicans blocking this. Just be right. Aware of that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you have Joe Manchin, who calls a Zoom call this weekend and says, look, if we're going to pass any kind of additional money, we want to first see that first batch spent. Susan Collins of Maine, for instance, she came out, Republican, and said, hey, we still have $1.8 trillion that's sitting there from the December bill that hasn't been spent yet. Like, why? Like, there's all this money still sitting there that hasn't gone out yet. So now we're talking about another bill. This is what they're up against, folks. And that's why I think Biden just needs to go big. You know, he needs to just ram through some executive actions, do this reconciliation process, see what they can do to speed up that process. If they're going to deal with thousands of amendments, that's going to slow this entire process down, of course. That's irksome.
And right now is the most opportune time because Biden has the people on his side right now, like the population. So if he pushed it through, he could really make them look horrible for not passing it because there's a lot of Democrats and stuff that would get on board and back him, and then they'd have to answer to why they're blocking it.
Exactly. So put it on them. I mean, this is the thing. This is, you know, this is what I just don't understand before, which is like you could have actually put it in Mitch McConnell's lap, right? And instead, they didn't even bring it to the floor. They didn't manage to get it in his hands. And the president could have shown leadership on this issue and didn't. But it's interesting to see, like, that these former Trump administration officials are sort of calling on this. Here's the mooch, Anthony Scaramucci, who says, yeah, they need to go big on this, and they need to do it soon.
Is he going to get the support he needs for this $1.9 trillion stimulus package, or might they work with him but not too much, because maybe the Republicans want to take the White House back in the next 4 years.
Yes, and of course, they're not only the White House, they're playing for the congressional midterms. They obviously want to see if they can take back the House. And so, obviously, you know, the Senate's in more or less a tie, but you get the point. And so, yeah, there'll be some resistance. But I don't think, again, this could be contrarian. I think what's happened here, after watching the Capitol storm, an insurrection, the potential violence on elected leaders, calling for the death of Vice President Pence and Speaker Pelosi, I think what's happening here now is people are like, whoa, this has gotten a little bit out of hand. It's a little bit too far. Let's see if we can put some things together that can put the country at ease and transition us into a different environment that's more cooperative. And I think that's in the best interest of both parties. So if you're a Republican strategist, you're saying to yourself, okay, we got to do that because it'll help us win the midterms. And if you're a Democratic strategist, you're saying the same thing. We got to do that so that we can expand our majority. So the good news is I think both parties recognize that that's probably the best choice for them in terms of where the incentives lie.
So that's the mooch saying that, yeah, it does make sense to get something through on a bipartisan basis to show that look, we know that that moves the needle for voting, right? So, oh, you're a member of the Senate. You voted for stimulus. Great. I mean, because they're going to run ads against you. You know, John Ossoff didn't vote for the, you can see it now, right? He didn't vote to send you an additional $2,000. Vote him out. That's what's going to happen. So that's the very latest on that. But meanwhile, we've got the dollar, which is also just beginning to crash. And there's a number of factors involved in this. Of course, the printing of money for Wall Street, but also because people don't have stimulus money. Because we've seen huge declines in savings accounts, this is just starting. And this is, again, irksome and really troubling. If you've got your money right now and you know, seeing like basically a huge decline in the dollar, by the end of 2021, a 35% decline in the dollar. One of the big issues, of course, is against the euro and against China. So China, by the way, if you can believe, today marks the 1 year anniversary in China of the lockdown of Wuhan that lasted for 76 days, total lockdown in Wuhan. And they essentially got rid of the coronavirus there. Now there's been pockets that have popped up throughout China, but they've almost returned to total normal life in that region. Their economy is one of the only in the industrialized world that actually expanded after that. And the U.S. is struggling to keep up. And the U.S. dollar is really sinking fast. And certainly when you see it against the euro right now, ooh, it is troubling. So again, if you've got your money right now and you know you're trying to figure out what you should do, investing in the U.S. dollar is a huge mistake, because a dollar saved right now is a dollar lost. It's going to continue to decline. And you have to look at this. All right, we're going to talk about impeachment now. We got some big news on the impeachment front at just before 7 p.m. tonight. House managers will take the articles of impeachment, former President Donald Trump, they're going to walk them over to the Senate chamber, and it will actually trigger the formal start of the trial. The senators will be sworn in tomorrow to deal with this. However, the really important part of all of this is the proceedings will not begin until the week of February 8th. So they will be sworn in. The trial will actually officially start as soon as they hand these articles over to them. So here's a few things that they're watching out for. We are watching out for Trump's operation, his legal operation right now. So during the last impeachment, Trump had then Representative Mark Meadows. He was the lead. His lead lawyer was Jay Sekulow at the time. And White House Legislative Affairs Director Eric Ulland. That was who was running his operation up there. So who will be the point person this time? We don't know. So Trump has been talking to Senator Lindsey Graham, who basically helped him find a lawyer last week, Butch Bowers. Bowers is going to coordinate the leadership with lawyers on timing the overall legal strategy of this whole thing. So how long is this going to trial last? The trial guidelines that the Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer and Majority Leader Mitch McConnell announced on Friday were just a compromise, and it's just simply an outline. McConnell wants to give Trump more time to prepare. Schumer wants it to be over as quickly as possible because they've got stuff to do. And the Senate, of course, is set for a week-long President's Day recess beginning February 15th. So they're gone for a whole week. By the way, we would get one day off for President's Day. Why are they getting a week off? Why does Congress get a week off for President's Day? It's not President's Week. It's President's Day. So will the trial extend into a second week? Are there witnesses called? There's a lot of questions on this. And really few answers because no one's answering them.
They need to change their salary so that it's paid a percentage of the days that they work instead of...
Oh, my God. They would not like that. Because
the
days that they work is so small.
Yeah, and they can mess with our pay, but we can't... Why can't we... Like, what do we have to do to mess with their pay? Let's somehow figure out how we can give them pay cuts until we get something.
Yeah, exactly. Of course, we're all going to be watching out for the small number of GOP senators, like who might actually vote for impeachment this time around. They're going to be quieter, like once the trial actually starts, because they're going to say, "Hey, we're just jurors now. We can't talk about this." But do you think, let me ask you guys in the chat, do you think that there will be 17 Republicans who would vote to convict Trump? How many people believe that there will be 17 Republicans who will vote to convict? That's the number that they need. But there are some senators that we're going to be watching out for on this. For instance, McConnell and his leadership team. Right now, that's up in the air. Is McConnell going to vote to convict Trump? He knows the future of the Republican Party is tied to this. We did get some breaking news this morning, though, that according to Trump's team, apparently he has no interest in starting a third party. Okay, so is this Patriots Party going to go down in flames? And is he going to just enjoy his retirement playing golf without a Twitter account? The Trump team is also lobbying Facebook this morning, trying to get their account turned back on Facebook. So will Mitch McConnell vote to convict? Yeah, interesting question. What about Mitt Romney? Here are some potential yes votes. Senator Mitt Romney, who voted to convict before. Why wouldn't he not vote this time around? Which this time around is arguably way worse. Senator Ben Sasse of Nebraska has already said he would vote. Senator Susan Collins of Maine. She might be a yes to impeach. Lisa Murkowski of Alaska. She probably will vote to convict. Pat Toomey has already said he thinks that he will vote to convict. So those, and that list could grow. Now, the real question is, what about those Senate Republicans that are up for re-election in 2022? Because this is going to be the real ones to watch. Todd Young of Indiana. Like, if any of you live in these particular areas and you want these senators to vote for conviction, get on the phone. Call your senator's office. Are you in Indiana? Call Todd Young of Indiana. Are you in Missouri? Call Roy Blunt. What about Mike Crapo of Idaho? What about Jerry Moran of Kansas? Rob Portman of Ohio? James Lankford of Oklahoma? They're all in this category. They're all running in 2022. And they all know that a vote to convict Trump could have huge political implications for them. Richard Shelby of Alabama, Chuck Grassley of Iowa, they're about to retire, so maybe they'll just vote their conscience. They don't care about running again. Richard Burr of North Carolina said he's already not running. He could vote to convict. So again, these people could say, hey, I'm going to vote my conscience like Pat Toomey. So the impeachment begins tonight. The trial will start technically on February 8th, where they will actually perhaps call witnesses, hear from different members of the legal team, and so forth and so on. So Trump's team is now in place, and he will have to fight this going forward. Let me know whether you think they will vote to convict the president on this.
So I just did some math, just out of curiosity. I multiplied the number of senators, took the furniture budget plus their salaries, and it's around $9.2 million a month that we pay for them, which is times 12. That's $109 million just for their salaries. And that's not including all the other bureaucracies and people that comes out of our money.
Come on, man. That's crazy.
Come on, man.
Exactly. That's how much we pay for them, members of Congress.
A month.
they're doing the hard work, right? They're working for us. They're really sticking their necks out there for us, these members of Congress.
Earning that money.
So on the conviction front, like, here's a guy. Remember, think about the 100 or so, what is it, 140 of these clowns that voted to invalidate your vote. Remember? Like, you voted in your state for a particular candidate, and these clowns voted to not certify the election. Throw your votes out, basically. Well, here's one of them. This video has gone viral, and you're going to see why it's gone viral this weekend. Watch as Pamela Brown throws this Republican senator, this Republican member of Congress, a lifeline, trying to get him to answer some simple questions here that he just simply can't answer on this impeachment front and on convicting the president.
Says that you aim to, quote, rise above the partisan fray. Yet you are one of 138 Republicans who voted to decertify the election results. You actually did that even after the January 6th riots. So how does that help you reaching your goal of reaching across the aisle and working with the Biden administration?
Well, I'll tell you, as despicable as the events on January 6th were, it didn't actually affect my thought process on objecting to the election. You see, I wasn't objecting to President Biden himself, and I wasn't doing it on behalf of President Trump. I was doing it on behalf of the Constitution. I think in key six key swing states.
Look at her face. She's like, you're doing it on behalf of the Constitution? Nowhere in the Constitution does it say anything about this. What are you doing? Like, you literally made up something. You're doing this on behalf of the Constitution? Okay.
It's particularly in Wisconsin, you can see that the state legislature, who is the sole body that is supposed to dictate the law that is circumvents and is around all of our...
What are you even saying? I'm sorry, how much do we pay this guy? What's his furniture budget at the House of Representatives? $30,000 a year for furniture for a clown like this?
Our election laws was circumvented. They subverted the state legislatures there, and I believe that's a constitutional infraction.
Okay, so let's talk about this. Let's unpack that. Can you just share some specific examples of election fraud?
Living a dream in our chat says, someone get him a binky.
Is this his first TV interview?
Yeah, probably. Hi, I am new in the House of Representatives, and I think it is unconstitutional.
What are some specific examples that informed this bold decision, this audacious decision, even after the riots, to decertify the results? You must have seen some concrete evidence.
Well, Pam, the things that I was not objecting to the election on behalf of was things like Dominion voting machines changing ballots or these U-Haul trucks pulling up filled with ballots for Joe Biden as president. The thing I was objecting for is things like, in the state of Wisconsin, particularly in the town of Madison, there was an appointed official in that town who actually went against the will of the state legislature and created ballot drop boxes, which is basically ballot harvesting that was happening in the parks.
But this was all litigated. You know that the Trump campaign litigated all of this, more than 60 cases, and they lost. Either the cases were dismissed, the Trump campaign withdrew, or they never brought a case because they didn't have the evidence to back it up.
Indeed, I believe specifically, and this is the one that I debated on behalf of on the House floor, in Wisconsin, that was never heard because they dismissed it because of standing. Now, I don't believe that is a concrete enough of a way.
Well, there were three Trump appointments. Okay, so you have Wisconsin, but you ended up not actually voting against Wisconsin. It was just Arizona and Pennsylvania because you didn't have the Senate votes. But three Trump-appointed judges actually threw out these cases because of merit. It was because of merit. There were three Trump-appointed judges out of all of these judges and the more than 60 cases that were tossed out. And you keep talking about Wisconsin. I'm still not hearing any specific examples of fraud. If you would, just tell us, what are the specific examples you saw of fraud? Because when you think of fraud, you think of a vote, you're slipping one past the election official, or a vote was stolen, somehow it didn't count. Did you see that specifically?
No, Pam. And like I said, that's
so
not the reason.
No. So, no, I didn't see any evidence. Okay.
I contested the election.
Hold on. And so you wanted to throw out millions of votes without actually seeing any concrete evidence of fraud? Because that's what you were doing when you were contesting the election. The intent there was throwing out millions of votes.
Well, I disagree with you on that point. That was not my intent. My intent was to hold up the Constitution, and setting up ballot drop boxes, which is essentially ballot harvesting in Wisconsin, is unconstitutional because the state legislature said they didn't want that.
So you know more than the judge, the Trump-appointed judge, who said that, who actually looked at that case before the election and dismissed the Trump campaign's argument that drop boxes are unconstitutional. And if you would you point to me and where in the Constitution it says that drop boxes are unconstitutional? I don't recall seeing that in the Constitution.
No, so the way that I believe it was unconstitutional is because in Article 1, Section 2, Clause 1 of the Constitution, it states that only state legislatures will mandate the manner in which an election is conducted.
Okay. Right. We actually have that on the screen. Go ahead.
Excellent. But when you go into the state of Wisconsin, you see that the state legislature actually voted actively against having vote drop boxes there. And then in the town of Madison, they decided to set them up anyways.
So you're making an obscure case on this. Other constitutional experts say, look, what this says right here, this Article 2 of the Constitution says that the legislature can decide what dictates the electors. And they did decide before this election. The states did decide that the plurality of the vote would dictate who the electors are. So that did actually happen. And I just want to also ask you, what sort of research did you put in? What kind of work did you put in before you decided to make this objection? I'm just curious what you read. Did you actually go to any of the states to look at the voter fraud? What kind of research did you put into this?
No, so we hired three constitutional lawyers who looked into this
So no, I didn't do any of that work, but hired a guy.
For our campaign. And then the findings that we had is that, as you said, I believe in the reading the Constitution through the prism of original intent. And I believe the original intent of the framers of the Constitution was to make sure that the federal government can't exercise overreach and go into these states and dictate our laws of how to run elections.
So there you go. That's a guy who's getting paid a nice chunky salary and has a whole week's vacation off.
You know, I wish that every single political interview went that way. Like, she didn't let him get out of it. Like, that wasn't softball questions. Like, every politician should be interviewed like that.
Exactly. Like Tim Russert style. You know, that's why I loved Tim Russert on Meet the Press. He would, you know, what I used to try to do when I was on television, you know, and Fox and otherwise, is just I'd interview Republicans and just as hard as I would interview Democrats and ask those questions, the difficult questions. I'm glad they also let this interview go on for a while because, you know, in a 3-minute interview, you can't get into some of the stuff. But she got him to admit, no, I didn't see any evidence. Zero. None. I didn't see it. Oh, okay. So you're admitting you didn't have any evidence. What evidence and research did you do? Nothing. Well, we hired a guy. Okay. That's great. Thank you for your tough work. That's a member of Congress right there that we pay for. But they send a letter that they are committed to working with President Biden now. Because now they know, I'm telling you, follow the money. Because now what's happening is these guys are losing donors. The people that did this kind of crap are the people that are now losing money. And all of these big businesses are now saying, you know, you voted to throw out millions of votes? Okay, then we're not going to give your campaign money anymore. They're like, no, you know what? We're going to send a letter to Biden and tell him we're going to work with him. So can I still have some of your money? Follow the money. Follow the money right to the top of these big media companies. Here's a story that I find absolutely troubling, and we should all be paying attention to this censorship. There's been a purge. There's been a purge now of left-wing accounts from social media. Now, Caitlin Johnstone doing some great reporting on this, but right now, socialist organizations, far-left groups, are being targeted on Facebook and multiple Antifa-associated accounts suspended from Twitter. So, you know, I'm a progressive, and I warned all of you a few weeks ago, David and I both did, we were talking about after the Capitol riots, and they started shutting down Trump's accounts and other people's accounts, that this is the first step towards a widespread censorship, a wiping clean of these different social media platforms by these corporate, you know, tech giants, these corporate elites. If they don't like what you have to say, it's wiped away.
This is why it was really dangerous that these people that are getting taken down now are the people that were asking for the other side to be taken down. were not against them being taken down, and now they're getting taken down. And that was why, you know, when you think about free speech and all that other stuff and censorship, you have to protect the unpopular speech more than the popular speech, because that's when this happens.
Exactly. Yeah, you're right about that. So, like, we run a progressive show here, right? We, the things that we stand for on this show, things that we believe in, you know, Medicare for all, making sure that people have access to health care, a living wage, ending foreign wars, right? These are not things, though, that are supported by corporate media. So when you tune into CNN, when you tune into Fox, when you tune into these big channels, they do not support the things that we support. They do not want universal income, basic income. They do not want universal health care. They do not want insurance companies to not be incredibly profitable. They do not want the pharmaceutical companies to be incredibly profitable, right? Because they make money off of them. Think about all of those advertisers that funnel money to these big business and big billionaire corporations. That's exactly what happens. So we on this show, we're saying, be careful what you wish for. Because now, you know, you're shutting down like Trump's accounts and these other, it's going to start on you. And once it starts on you, then you're going to start to hear tears, right? And that's exactly what's happening. But many of these groups who are being shut down, you're right. David's right. Like, they came out and said, that's dangerous. We should not be censoring. We should not be shutting these accounts down. Let them speak their mind and let us then, of course, let the FBI go after someone if they're inciting violence. Let the person knock on their door who threatens a politician. Let the law enforcement handle it. And now you shut down these Facebook accounts and other things. And what happens? They go underground. They go to these, they're using like high school sports forums now to have these discussions. So here's breaking news over the weekend.
Can I say really quick before you get into that? That this reminds me of the... this quote, I can't remember the person's name, but it says, first they came for the socialists and I did not speak out because I was not a socialist. Then they came for the trade unionists and I did not speak out because I was not a trade unionist. Then they came out for the Jews and I did not speak out because I was not a Jew. Then they came for me and there was no one left to speak for me.
Hmm. Right. Like, oh, it's because it's about them. Oh, it's about those white supremacists that stormed the Capitol.
And that's where we're at.
So it's just them. And now it's coming for those on the left. So what is going to be left is those in the middle. It's the big corporate elites. It's all of those voices that could affect change in this country being blocked, cut out. Here's one organization that had their account shut down. We have just confirmed that Facebook has disabled the page of the International Youth and Students for Social Equality at the University of Michigan, as well as the accounts of all admins. It's from the World Socialist website editor. So this is an unprecedented attack on the speech rights of an official campus student group, the World Socialist website. They also reported the following. On Friday, Facebook carried out a purge of left-wing, anti-war, progressive pages and accounts, including leading members of the Socialist Equality Party. Facebook gave no explanation why. They just disabled the accounts. They didn't even publicly acknowledge anything that the deletions had even occurred. At least half a dozen leading members of the Socialist Equality Party had their Facebook accounts permanently disabled, including the public account of Genevieve Lee, who is the National Secretary of the International Youth and Students for Social Equality, and the personal account of Niles Nemeth, the U.S. managing editor of the World Socialist website. Just for some context here, back in 2016, Nemeth was the Socialist Equality Party's candidate for the U.S. vice presidency. They shut him down. Here's some context on this, and we should all be upset. None of the individuals whose accounts were disabled had violated Facebook's policies. Upon attempting to appeal deletion of their account, they received an error message saying, we cannot review the decision to disable your account. With no explanation or warning, Facebook has effectively seized the intellectual property of those it has targeted, cutting them off from years of their photographs, their writings, and their online discussion forums. Facebook also disabled the London Bus Drivers Rank and File Committee Facebook page, which was set up with the support of the Socialist Equality Party in the UK to organize opposition among bus drivers. This was because of a widely discussed call for a walkout by bus drivers to demand elementary protections against COVID-19. Like, these bus drivers wanted, they were like basically unionizing, saying we need protections. And we're organizing. And Facebook shut them down.
Well, and it's like the whole conversation, you know, went this direction after the Capitol, because they knew that people were just hyper sensitive and like, we're going to shut down all these white supremacist accounts and everything. And everybody like, yes, close them down, close them down, close them down. No, wait a minute. What? Now you're closing mine down? It's like people are just on board because people think that they're doing the right thing. But this is so wrong on many levels. And it's just going to get worse.
Right. So this all follows, of course, what David was just talking about, which is the purge of these right wing accounts after the Capitol riot earlier this month. Well, guess what? As Caitlin Johnson said, it's just the pendulum is now swinging back. It's the pendulum of censorship is swinging back the other way now. And it surprises, as she said, nobody that knows anything about anything, because we knew this was coming. We were talking about it right here on the channel weeks ago. And David's right, like all of these liberals, like in Hollywood and so forth, were super excited about it. Like, Trump is shut down. Trump is shut down. I got some pushback online when a friend of mine who's a liberal, he tweeted out about president's account being shut down. I said, we better be careful because they're going to start coming for you. They're going to start going the opposite way. And they're going to start targeting the left now.
Well, and you saw that video.
Like, no, that's not going to happen.
You saw that video from the CEO of Twitter, Jack Dorsey, right? Where he was saying, you know, that they're going to just start doing that. Like, there's going to be more.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And Angela Merkel, I mean, these foreign governors or governments are so right in saying that's just too much power for Twitter, because they can actually change the conversation. They can actually push their agenda just by removing certain accounts. And these foreign leaders are now like, well, we're not going to post on Twitter now, because if you can take them down. So what if we have a party that doesn't agree with, you know, like it makes things unfair. It makes things biased.
And these big companies, I mean, Facebook, the Twitter, all of these big tech companies, they run the country. I mean, Google runs, you know, think about Google, Facebook, Twitter, all of these big social media platforms and big media organizations, they run everything. I mean, the fact that you can have like MSNBC that refused to put on Andrew Yang on their airwaves during the presidential race, and he was doing better than Kamala Harris was in running for president. And they wouldn't even put him on their graphics to show who was running for president. And when they tried to do interviews, they were shut down. You're not allowed to have him on our air because he is too left. He is too progressive.
Well, and they have to listen to that because...
He does not support this media elite agenda.
Ed Schultz, I don't know if you remember Ed Schultz, he lost his job because he bought Bernie on. He was actually supporting Bernie on his show and talking about it, and he got fired.
On MSNBC.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what happened to Ed Schultz? Gone. Like, hear from him anymore?
Well, he's passed away now, but...
Right. But right afterwards, like, I think he tried to get, like, a radio job. Like, I used to call into his show. I enjoyed his radio show.
He ended up on RT. He was a RT news guy.
That's right. That's right. That's right.
But the thing is, like, so I still feel like it's a stretch. It is an absolute stretch to say that Trump was actually like inciting violence in his tweets. I mean, you have to really like they said, Twitter said when they took it down, it could be seen that way. Right. But then I saw last week, Antifa for Portland had actual calls for violence and their tweets weren't taken down. I mean, these were legitimate calls for violence and they weren't taken down. So it's like, if we have these people not being consistent with what calling for violence actually is, you know, like there's no groundwork. There's no, the rules don't apply to all of us. It's like the conservatives are getting taken down. The far left is getting taken down. So it's like, why don't they just have very concrete and very easy to understand guidelines that we know where to follow? That's the problem. A lot of it's just arbitrary.
Yeah, it's the whims of like Jack Dorsey being on vacation and getting a phone call and just says, yeah, that's a good idea, I guess. Here's Ryan Knight tweeted this. Leading members of the Socialist Equality Party had their Facebook accounts permanently disabled. This is outrageous and exactly what many of us on the left feared would happen. Standing in solidarity with them, and Mark Zuckerberg can F the right off. And you don't hear any of this from the White House. You don't hear any of this pushback. I would love for a reporter to ask the White House about this, members of Congress about this. I would love for someone tonight, I'm going to be watching this afternoon, Jen Psaki's press conference. Will anyone ask her about this? Like, what is the White House stance on this?
Oh, yeah, but they won't answer. They never answer.
Come on, man.
Not going to answer that. You see this, like, so, yeah, he tweets this. We've just confirmed that Facebook disabled the page of the International Youth and Students for Social Equality. So, I'm sorry, this is a page about youth and students that want social equality, and you took it down? Okay.
Well, then the press secretary would be like, well, you know, we took it down because, you know, domestic terrorism, we've got this, you know, thing of domestic terrorists now, and we have to start taking it down so that their message doesn't spread.
And that's how it starts. I mean, the fact that you have somebody like Angela Merkel coming out and the president of Mexico coming out saying, like, no, that's a bridge too far. Like, you're going to censor political leaders now? That's what you're doing. The response to this message is fascinating. My Progressive Party group was dissolved by Facebook today. I can assure you that a few thousand Bernie lovers are not exactly inciting violence. What they're doing is clear and expected. Censorship is never aimed at one ideology or the other. Its main target is dissent from the ruling class wherever it comes from. Let that sink in for a moment. Censorship is never aimed at one ideology or the other. Its main target is dissent from the ruling class wherever it comes from. That's exactly right.
Well, then this is
so
a
just tweet
this
about,
is a
you know, just tweet about vanilla things, right? Things that don't actually affect change in this country. So just tweet about cats, stuff that won't actually help people lift people out of poverty, change the status quo, right? Fight for getting, you know, lower medical, pharmaceutical costs in this country. I'm sure, you know, Bernie Sanders tweeted about, you know, pharmaceutical costs the other day and how out of whack they are with the rest of the world. I bet if that was an account by some random socialist, it'd probably be taken down. But because it's Bernie, maybe we have more of an eye on it, so we can't touch that account. But this is what they don't want. They don't want you challenging the corporate elite. They don't want you tweeting about these things. They don't want you talking about this online.
No, because if you do, you'll get taken down like Parler. I mean, people can say all they want about Parler, but it was not what people are saying it, thinking it is. And they just outright went after it. See, for me, what I was thinking this weekend, the biggest problem is our media is establishment, our social media is establishment. Because if you look at the media right now, the news channels, they put out more misinformation than we do on this show. And they indoctrinate people. They like Fox News indoctrinates people on the right. MSNBC and CNN indoctrinate people on the left. They plant their flags. But then if you download any news app, you go to any social media, who do they legitimize as actual news? All of the Fox, CNN, those are your trusted news sources. They're free from censorship. They don't get taken down. They can show violence. They can break all the guidelines, but we can't. So when we post anything that goes against anything that they say, we are at risk. So it's the establishment, and this is a fight that we have to fight.
I think you're right. I mean, like, look, I was looking through some of my videos this weekend, and I thought, like, why is that one demonetized? Like, why is that one hidden? Because it was me covering certain things that they could cover on the CNN channel on YouTube, but I can't because I'm an independent journalist. Like, I run an independent media organization. But because I'm not run by billionaires, I'm not Google, I'm not Apple, I'm not Facebook, you know, I'm not these big Wall Street corporate elites. Like, I can't, I run the risk of having, like, videos demonetized, taken down to try to hide, you know, the truth from people. And we wonder why, you know, in America, we think, like, we're fighting for this freedom, but we're really not. What most people are just saying is just, you know, just make me safe. But I'll give all my freedoms away. Someone earlier asked in the chat, someone said, Clayton, or someone was a super chat, I think. Someone said, why do people vote against their self-interests? Why do people, you know, support Trump when they vote against their own self-interests? Like, he's going to support the wealthy. Like, but why do the people? It's because we're spoon-fed day in and day out by these big media corporations to keep people ignorant.
Well, and you can, people can get mad at the people that bum rush the Capitol and everything. But the thing is, like I was saying, those people were indoctrinated by Fox News. And then everything, every social media site, every app you download legitimizes that news channel. So those people think that that is the truth. They think what they are hearing is the truth. So we cannot really blame them. We can try to help them and get them over here and watch shows like this and get them away from that. I love seeing in the chat how many people are like, I don't watch mainstream media anymore. I left Fox News. Because that's exactly what they are doing. They're indoctrinating people, and it's and they think that they're doing the right thing with all of their heart. They are good people that think they are doing the right thing, but they're not.
And so they carried this pail of water for like a year for the president, you know, and all through, like, how many members of the media, you know, made their money saying that this election was fraudulent and driving ratings, so that they make their money, lying to the American people, carrying this water, putting out these ridiculous stories. And anyone who didn't want to, you know, who wants to tell the truth then gets knocked off of Facebook, gets blocked, you know, gets blocked like these guys. The unprecedented attack on the speech rights of an official campus student. Like, where are they supposed to go now? And I think that this tweet is perfect. Censorship is never aimed at one ideology or another. Its main target is dissent from the ruling class, wherever it comes from. And this is particularly a question that Tulsi Gabbard, who's been a you know, she warned against this. Tulsi Gabbard, who ran for president on the Democratic side, warned about this. And she, of course, she was had to deal with all of the ridiculous mainstream media campaigns against her because she was speaking the truth, truth to power, wanting to end foreign wars, worrying about censorship. She was one of the first people that was worried about this censorship of President Trump and shutting down these accounts. And so now, as these groups are starting to like look for domestic terrorists in the United States, and they're starting to clamp down on this, and they're going to start to go through everything to try to use all of this military might now here at home, this is something we should be really concerned about. Here is Tulsi Gabbard, by the way, on a Fox interview.
Begin with or heard from appointees and nominees in the Biden administration who are already starting to look across our country for these types of movements similar to the insurgencies they've seen overseas that, in his words, he says, make up this unholy alliance of religious extremists, racists, bigots. He lists a few others and adds at the end, even libertarians. So when you look at their process and they start looking at, okay, what characteristics right. are we looking for as we're building this profile of a potential extremist? What are we talking about? Religious extremists? Are we talking about Christians, evangelical Christians? What is a religious extremist? Is it somebody who's pro-life? I mean, Where do you take this? You start looking at, okay, well, obviously you have to be a white person, obviously likely male, libertarians. Well, if anybody who loves freedom, liberty, maybe has an American flag outside their house, or people who, you know, attended a Trump rally. Once you start walking this down the path, you see where it leads to a very dangerous undermining of our civil liberties, mm-hmm. our freedoms in our Constitution, and a targeting of almost half of the country.
Incredibly troubling. So I wanted to bring this story to you today on the censorship front because I think it's incredibly important. And we're just seeing the beginnings of this, folks. So when you have a friend or family member out there who's like, I'm so glad they shut them down. So just be careful what you wish for, because now they're coming for you. Now they're coming for your viewpoints. Now they're coming for you because you support, you know, wanting to lift people out of poverty, slashing pharmaceutical prices in this country, having an equitable healthcare system for Americans. The list goes on and on. But guess what? That goes against the corporate agenda. If pharmaceutical companies can't make tons of money, They can't spend ads on MSNBC and CNN and Fox and all these other Bloomberg and CNBC and all these other television stations. Every time you flip on afternoon television, it's all pharmaceutical ads, right? And healthcare ads. They make so much money, and it's a big circle, all of these guys. Why do you think they want to shut down these viewpoints? Because they want to continue to make money. So hopefully we've brought you some value today here on the show. If we did, please smash that like button. I really appreciate it. And subscribe to the channel. Really appreciate that. And we can bring you some extra value too, because we do our newsletter every morning, first thing in the morning, and it's totally free. 5 days a week, Monday through Friday. And you can join our newsletter. Just go to morninginvest.com, enter your email address. And here's what I want you to do. Everyone watching right now who hasn't signed up, go sign up right now. And you'll get a welcome email sent to your inbox. It might go to your junk folder or spam folder. Just find out where it goes. And then just respond back to me. Let me know you got it, because that goes right to my email. So just hit me back after you get the welcome email and say, I got it. And I will say thank you. So let me know that you got that welcome email for our free newsletter where we cover the day's stories first thing in the morning over your cup of coffee. So my all of you joining us today.
Yeah. I just want to say, like, because of what the media has done and because of what, you know, the Biden administration is doing right now, we still have a lot of people, like there's somebody in the chat specifically, but there's a lot of people that still assume that all Trump supporters, all Fox News viewers are racist. And that drives me insane, because that is such a small number of people, like in the great scheme of things. So you can't label every single Trump supporter and every single person that rushed the Capitol was not a racist, was not a white supremacist. They're mixed in there, but they're mixed in everywhere. So I just,
yeah, I always have a huge problem with generalizations.
Yeah.
Like I can't stand it with my kids. Like when my kids say, you all, you know, my son, but Ava always does this to me. I get angry when my wife makes a generalization like, you always, oh, she's in the room, be quiet. You always leave the cabinets open, or, you know, whatever, right? No, that's not true. So everyone that went to the Capitol was a white supremacist, is a racist. That's not the case. And it's the same thing on the other side. You know, you're a socialist. That means that you can't stand rich people. It's like, no. There's different shades of that, right? Like, you might support socialist ideas, but also you want people to be able to start their own business and be profitable and all of those things. So to paint someone with these terms is always a problem. Any mass generalization about a population is always troublesome. So we had a couple other super chats here. Let me see if I answered Megan Decker's super chat. Clayton, why do you think people vote against their own interest? Again, I think people are spoon-fed. And a lot of times these politicians run on ideas, and they run television ads, and of course it's echoed on all of these news stations on these cultural issues. So they just focus on abortion, right? For the Supreme Court. Like, you got to vote for this because you know, but what people don't understand is that there are no cases about abortion coming to the Supreme Court. Almost none. Zero. The majority of cases that go before the Supreme Court have to do with big companies crushing little people. That's it. Workers' rights against big corporations. So what's brilliant with these politicians is that they mask it. They're like, you got to vote for it. We've got to push for Amy Coney Barrett to be on the Supreme Court because she is pro-life. Oh, but ignore the fact that she's also pro big business and has voted against or ruled against the small person, workers, almost her entire career. But you won't hear that at all. You'll just hear them talk about cultural issues. And those are the things that move the needle. Rumpel Gold says that Clayton, Biden passed this weekend the $400 billion to South America countries. Why can't he pass stimulus for us? Well, again, that's what we talked about at the beginning, but I'm hoping he has the backbone here to go big on this. But, you know, look, don't be surprised. We warned you, you know. Biden is not a progressive. If anything, he's a corporate Democrat, middle of the road corporate Democrat. He has been his entire career.
see. Connie White says no conviction on Trump, doesn't think that's going to happen. And pandemic unemployment assistance ends for people in Arizona next week, not March. Yeah. Again, a lot of this stuff is about to run out. Big Dog says, is a 401k still safe or something else? I'm not a fan of the 401k, Big Dog, unless your company matches you where you actually get some money after you're invested, or I'm sorry, vested with your company for a number of years. Very often, though, the stock that you get from a company match is stock in your own company. So, okay, like, hey, great, I'm getting some company match stock here, but that's actually the company I work for, which may or may not be good. And very few companies are continuing to do company matches anymore. I would consider looking at what you can do. You know, I'm not a financial advisor, not a lawyer, so you know, take that with a grain of salt. But if it were my money, my 401k, what I did was moved it over to a self-directed IRA, which enabled me then to a truly self-directed IRA, which enabled me to invest in real estate. I can invest in stocks there if I want. I can invest in gold and silver, and I have full control over it. See, in a 401k, you're paying all of these fees to these companies that you don't even know about because they're hidden in there. So thank you, guys. Laura Paddleford says, I look forward to the show, but where on the website can I become a VIP member? Oh, just go to right there, morninginvest.com/join, and you can be a subscriber right there. Pretty easy to do. So thank you guys, everyone, for joining us. We'll see you back here today at 4 p.m. Eastern time. Be sure to subscribe to the channel. If you're not already subscribed, just hit it right here. Subscribe right here. And thank you, everyone, on Twitch, Facebook, on Twitter. While we have that voice, we'll use it. Much love to all of you guys. We'll see you back here later this afternoon, everyone. Peace.